State and Local Government Operations Committee will come to order. Our first order of business is a confirmation for members of the Campaign Finance Board. I'm sorry, Senator Clark, if you don't mind, there are guests.
Go for it.
We'll go to you next. And we're pleased to welcome to the committee table, if you will, Ms. Hilda Betterman. And is Ms. Felicia Boyd here?
Chair. Felicia Boyd is not here yet. She's coming in. So if you want to defer us till later.
No, we'll go ahead and accommodate your schedule, Ms. Betterman. So please take a seat. And the appointments should be in your packets, members. We have these two appointments to consider for the Campaign Finance Board. Ms. Betterman is known to us, to many of us, as Representative Betterman. It's a pleasure to see you here. Would you like to make a brief statement about your appointment and your service on the Campaign Finance Board?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. As she said, I'm Hilda Betterman, and I have served one term on the Campaign Finance Board as the former Republican legislator position on the board. I was appointed by Governor Pawlenty earlier, and he has seeks my reappointment again. I am currently retired. I retired from the Alexandria Technical College on December 31st, so I am more available than ever. I enjoyed my time on the Campaign Finance Board. And even though I'm a Republican appointee, when we walk into the room, we leave our political credentials at the door and we apply the law. And so I've enjoyed my time on the board, and I would appreciate your confirmation. Thank you.
Is there a discussion, or do the members have any questions for Ms. Betterman? Seeing none, Senator Larson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that the committee recommend that the appointment of Hilda Betterman to the Campaign Finance and Public Disclosure Board be confirmed.
You've heard Senator Larson's motion. Is there discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of the motion, please say aye.
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 Opposed? The motion prevails, and your recommendation for your confirmation will be forwarded to the Senate floor.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much for being with us. We will consider Ms. Boyd's confirmation later this evening whenever she arrives. The next item on the agenda, Senator Clark. And members, we are going to take the bills in order. I would expect that the most discussion may be about the pension bill, but we will finish this meeting in time for the for us to get back on the Senate floor after the recess, and perhaps there would be an opportunity for members to have something to eat as well. Senator Clark.
Madam Chair, members, thank you for taking this time and perhaps delaying your dinners. The issue that's in front of the committee right now is an important one. Currently, the Constitution requires the legislature to set our own compensation. And let's face it, we've had some challenges in doing that, in part because we really do have an inherent conflict of interest in the process itself. And we've been looking for alternatives and ways to better be addressing this that also would make it more comfortable for members and to feel like a real thorough review has happened and that we're doing something that is that makes sense. There has been in statute a compensation council, but because it was statutory, the last time recommendations were made, it was not adopted by the legislature. So after discussing with many members, and lots of people in the public, the the idea at the, in front of you today, excuse me, is to propose a constitutional amendment that would remove our ability to determine our compensation and have a Citizens Compensation Council instead be the ones that would be setting it. In addition, they would also set the compensation for the judiciary and for our constitutional office holders. It would appear that those are the areas we have had the most challenge of trying to figure out the balance between adequate compensation, but also, the issue of conflict of interest. So, for example, with the governor's salary, many other appointments are tied to that, but it is very challenging for the chief executive to figure out when or how it's appropriate to modify that compensation. But it has impacted our state's ability to really attract commissioners in some cases, among others. And I think we saw this last year with the budget. When we were putting together the budget, we had judges coming over lobbying us on what their pay ought to be. At the same time, there were significant needs of the courts in terms of case flow, among other things. This would remove the political element from that. So what is in front of you, and Madam Chair, actually we do have an amendment, the A4 I believe you have, and perhaps before we have Mr. Bodden go through it, we should.
This is an author's amendment. Senator Pappas moves the A4 amendment to get the bill in the shape that the chief author would like to have it in order for discussion. All those in favor of the A4 amendment, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Senator Clark.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. The other thing that you should know, so the first part talks about the question and how the Constitution looked different. There is the article that talks about the Compensation Council. What I want to let you know is what is in front of you for your review and discussion is the same, trying to stay as true to the current makeup of the Compensation Council, where the governor, the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, and both the House and the Senate make some appointments. There is one difference. Right now, legislators actually sit on it. This removes that, and it removes current elected officials or former elected officials from serving on it. The other thing that the members are probably going to want to take a look at is you'll notice that three members are selected each from the House and the Senate. The way that has been done, at least the way it is in current law, is not set up the way that we generally do things in the Senate, and it also is three, not four or two. And I, again, in trying to keep it to what the current makeup is, I'm bringing this to you in this form, but that is probably something we want to look at. The goal is to have balance in terms of party on this. We don't want to have it being tilted one way or the other, and we thought that that the current system sets it up pretty well. And Senator Rust, Madam Chair, perhaps Mr. Bodden could go through exactly how this is set up for the committee.
Mr. Bodden.
Madam Chair and members, I think Senator Clark has covered most of it. If you look on the A4 amendment, essentially the A4 amendment replaces all of the Section 1 of the bill, which contains the constitutional amendment. What you see on lines 1.3 to 1.24 are basically conforming amendments to reflect the changes that are going to be contained in the new Article 15 of the Constitution that would create the Compensation Council. The amendment does specify that the Compensation Council is created in each odd-numbered year and then also provides a sunset at the conclusion of the work of the Council on May 1st each year of its creation. One thing I'll point out on line 1.30, beginning there, it specifies that the Compensation Council, as far as legislators goes, must prescribe any per diem living expenses, but leaves other items of compensation to the statutes, saying they should be prescribed by law. The deadline for the Compensation Council to complete its work is May 1st of each odd-numbered year. And then on page 2, you'll see the paragraph there that starts with the membership of the Council consists of 16 members who must be residents of the state, may not hold or have held any office elective under the Constitution. That would prohibits members who had been or were currently legislators and occupied any other of the constitutional offices, but would not prohibit anyone who held office in local government. And then you'll see, obviously, that the change the amendment makes is that the Compensation Council, the appointing authority for that council is contained in law. Section 2 is contained on page 2 of the A4 amendment, and Senator Clark has described that fairly thoroughly. Subdivision 2 on page 2 is, again, modeled fairly closely after the existing Compensation Council. It does provide a few additional items just to clarify how the Compensation Council would operate. For example, the Chief Justice must select one of the members to convene the first meeting of the council. Then the other changes you see are basically technical and conforming within the amendment. And as far as the underlying bill goes, the amendment leaves most of Article 2 intact. And again, those are what you see in Article 2 of the bill are essentially conforming changes.
Senator Clark, I have a, I don't know whether it's in the statutes or in the Constitution about legislators not being able to vote on their own, on an increase to their own salary. What do you do with that provision of, is it in statute, Senator Clark?
Madam Chair, and I think that just because we've gone through a couple of different versions of this, maybe we should have Mr. Bodern tell us where it is because we did address
is
that.
Is that provision in statute or in the Constitution, current law?
Madam Chair and Senator Clark, that is in the Constitution, and you'll see on the amendment, on the A4 amendment, Article 4, Section 9, which begins on line 1.7, specifies how that the salaries of members of the legislature are provided. What I will note here is that obviously the members would no longer be establishing their own salaries. The council would be taking care of that. So you can see that provision is stricken.
And Madam Chair, and you know, I think that it's important to note that it's unclear what direction this group would go in. They hopefully would look at what other legislators do because it's all over the place, but to look at what makes the most sense for our state. But we do, again, have an inherent conflict, and that does seem to be what makes it so challenging, and certainly for people who have been around a lot longer than I have in this particular position. The hope is that we could get rid of that conflict, and then it would be addressed in this way. Madam Chair, I do have one person here to testify. I know you've got other bills, and there are other people who wanted to come. There's a lot of interest and belief that this fits with the idea of trying to have more of a transparent and, I guess, a good government kind of thing, but given we had a longer floor session. But I do have former Senator Roger Moe here.
Okay, I just want to just make sure that everybody understands as the amendment that we just adopted did not change Section 2 of Article 1, which is the question that will be put to the voters. Just so we have that clear in front of us and make sure we're taking deliberate action here. So that does address the issue that I just brought up about legislators voting on their own salaries. So the amendment is, statement is, shall the Minnesota Constitution be amended to remove legislators' ability to set their own salaries and instead establish a council to prescribe salaries for legislators and elected executive branch officers.
Madam Chair.
And this has nothing to do with judiciary?
Madam Chair, I misspoke earlier when I said that the question remained unchanged. There is a small amendment in the A4 amendment, lines 2.7 and 2.8 of that amendment
change
the question to reflect the inclusion of judges.
All right. I wanted to be clear about that because you had mentioned that this group is going to be the final arbiter of judges' salaries as well, although not any additional compensation. I didn't see that in the original language. It is now there. Mr. Moe. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Senator Rest, members of the committee. My name is Roger Moe, and I'm here at the request of Senator Clark, and in a position that I held for a relatively short period of time, I co-chaired with the former Republican Party chair, Chris Georgikis, an effort in the late 2005, after, you recall, you went into overtime, and there was a lot of talk about the process and everything. So we took a look at the legislative process, and we had a number of individuals who sat down with us. We have sent surveys to members of the legislature and staff and other interested people about certain things that they observed about the process. And we came up with this report. I apologize, mine's kind of scuffed up now, but it's devoted to some useful purpose. And we looked at a number of things. We spent most time on the budget process. But the part that Senator Clark asked me to address here had to do with the kind of political reforms. And we looked at a number of things that I won't touch on, but one of them was the compensation issue. And we suggested that because of the way the present process that you use, where you have to bring it back and ratify it, and that the salary for legislators had not been changed, has not now been changed since 1999. So it'll be 10 years or more before there's any adjustment in legislative compensation. And we felt that that in some cases is probably a deterrent to some people who might be interested in running for the legislature. And I don't have to tell you the sacrifices you make in your personal lives to perform this public service. So we suggested that salaries be significantly increased. But at the same time, to offset that by eliminating the per diem payments, and we felt strongly about that just for greater transparency and accountability into the system. I'm only addressing, of course, legislative, and I know that the proposal here is for everyone, judicial, executive, and legislative, and I agree with that as well. Chris Georgikis would have been here. Mm-hmm. He wanted to testify as well on behalf of this, but unfortunately the schedule was such that he couldn't.
Are there questions for Senator Clark? Senator Clark, I have one. You know, there was a it's just tangentially to this bill, but there has been a suit filed about, I think, in Ramsey County about whether the decision of either body to give per diem payments is constitutional. Do you know what the status? Do you have any idea what the status of that suit is?
Madam Chair, Mr. Bonner and I were talking about that. I think there. Do you want to address that, Mr. Bonner?
Mr. Bonner.
Madam Chair and Senator Clark. I have fairly recent copies of the motion papers. I don't think the first significant motion hearing is set for sometime in May. So,
and Madam Chair, I think that
Senator Clark,
part of your point there is that there has certainly been a lot of discussion. I know my own paper probably wrote about 5 editorials related to this issue, and not because they believe that we are overcompensated, but because of the process or the difficulty in the process or what might again appear to be conflicts at times. And that's not what people are sent here to do. They're sent here to do a job and do it in a good way. And my understanding, talking to a fair amount of attorneys, you know, there's a lot of belief that that lawsuit will be dismissed. But just the appearance of it does raise the question of how can we do this, and if we can remove ourselves, I believe the public will have more confidence in us being able to focus on our job.
Okay. Question, Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Clark. If we obviously wouldn't set our own salaries, but we do set all appropriations, so how would you handle this in the appropriation area? Would it just be a built-in? I'm just trying to figure out how we would appropriate for it, and yet we wouldn't be setting the salaries. It would just be considered a fixed cost every time, or what?
Senator Clark?
Madam Chair and Senator Roebling, that is why the timing, I'm trying to find the date again, about when it has to happen in the odd year. May 1st, I'm sorry, I believe it's on the bottom of page one. The council must prescribe salaries by May 1st of each odd number year, with any changes in the salary to take effect on January 1st of the next year. The goal then would be to be able to have enough notice that we know what it was so it would be accounted for within it.
Madam Chair?
Senator Roebling?
Do you think that, well, it wouldn't be a budget year then. It would happen after the election that the increase would occur. So we would know when we were setting the budget the amount was.
Madam Chair and Senator Roebling, that's correct.
Senator Gerlach?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm still unclear on how we get around the legislature appropriating the money. I mean, how do you get around a legislative vote? Or am I missing something here? If they're prescribing what the salaries are, a council can't appropriate the money. We still have to do that. There still has to be a legislative vote, sort of an affirmation of what they're prescribing. Isn't that correct, or am I missing something there?
Senator Clark?
Madam Chair and Senator Gerlach, if you think about other parts of our budget that we have made decisions about, we are passing funds that might relate, for example, to Medicaid or other things like that, but we already know what the costs are. We are not changing them. I mean, you might remember we had some interesting conversations last year about how much we were actually increasing our budget by. You know, some of us argue that we were increasing it solely by the inflation that we had control over. Others were arguing that because there were other costs that were going up because by law they went up, that it was it going up. But it was not for us to determine that change. Just like if a school child enters, you know, if we add several kids into a school district, the budget goes up by that. So I think that we're covered by that. I don't know if Mr. Bodern has any other thoughts to add to that, but we do that currently right now. There are things that we vote on in the budget that while we might technically be taking a vote, it's not up to us to decide what the amount is.
Senator Roebling?
Thank you, Madam Chair. On page one of the amendment, it says that other compensation, including health insurance and retirement benefits, shall be prescribed by law. Have we ever set our health benefits, for example, into statute? Or what does this mean?
Senator Clark?
Madam Chair and Senator Roebling, again, Mr. Bodern might have to help me out a bit here. The intent was to keep this, to give the legislature still the flexibility. By law, we certainly have health benefits, but we're not going to negotiate that through this council. Things like mileage reimbursement, things like housing, those types of things, it seemed like it made sense to keep it more the way that we are currently doing it. But it's this tends to be the things that look most closely like salary that this would be looking at. And I don't believe, and again, Mr. Bodern, we've been trying to anticipate all of the little glitches, so if we need to fix it, you're asking some very good questions. I believe we're okay, but again, Mr. Bodern may have some thoughts on that.
Mr. Bodern?
Madam Chair and Senator Roebling, it is true that, for example, the health insurance for members is established in law. I think in Chapter 3 it specifies that members are covered under the same health plan that applies to executive branch employees. And then there are various other matters that would be left to each body through appropriations made to that body, for example, mileage reimbursement and so forth. That would be considered prescribing it by law.
Senator Roebling?
Thank you. I'm wondering, though, shouldn't a compensation council take into consideration all forms of compensation, and certainly insurance and retirement benefits are a form of compensation. And, you know, if they don't consider that, they may think the salary should be much higher, but when you include those benefits and consider what that's worth to an employee or a person receiving them, you may have a different perspective on them, especially if health care premiums continue to increase like they are. It's a significant added benefit that in some places they kind of consider it a part of the salary. I mean, I'm just wondering if we're going to have a compensation, I do consider this part of my compensation, a retirement and health benefit. I don't know, Senator Clark, maybe you want to address that.
Madam Chair, I think there...
Senator Clark.
I think that that's something that if the committee is particularly interested in, I would not object to, but I would wonder if we start making it more complicated, perhaps, since we have, for example, again, with the health care, it is what is negotiated elsewhere. I would think, though, that in looking at the salary and per diem, that the council would look at what our other benefits are in determining what that level of pay would be. So it depends about how detailed and how many variances you want them to actually be making decisions on. But I certainly agree with your underlying, I think, premise, which is when they're looking at what our salary is, or what that is something that they could impact what the amount would be that they would recommend. Most definitely. So I think you can look at it either way, either that the council would be taking that into account when it would set what our pay is, or you could go the other route where they're looking at everything. I think we might want to be a little careful about having another entity be doing things that are reimbursable, such as things like mileage, because then, that may be more than you want to get into, but certainly, and I think we should, however you all want to handle this.
Senator Larson?
Well, Madam Chair, I understand what Senator Roebling, what you're getting at, and I think we should move slowly there, however, as it relates. I think that the Compensation Council would be able to look at those items, and it'd be fair to have those in front of them, especially as I'm thinking about health care, because I don't think we, I don't know exactly how our health care benefit is computed, but I think it's tied to other units, and it's tied to whatever deal has been negotiated for state employees. And then somehow involving the Compensation Council, it seems to me maybe more complicated than how we may want to make it. And I think in the pension benefit as well operates within a larger system. So I think the question is, how much more complicated do we make it? I think it is fair. I think you make a good point that's information that should be very available and valuable to the Compensation Council to be making their job easier in trying to determine what that level of benefit ought to be, and perhaps will have an impact on what level of salary or per diem that they set for us. But it seems to me we could put ourselves in a tough spot with some of those more complicated benefits that are currently available to us.
Senator Roebling?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm especially concerned because we're including the judiciary. And I would say that their retirement benefit is something that allows them to maybe take a lower pay as they serve as judges, because they have a very significant retirement benefit. And it's not a benefit that most law firms probably would be offering. So you need to take that into consideration as you're setting the compensation as well. Because most people in the private sector probably would not have a package like that, a defined benefit, which is almost unheard of in the private sector anymore today. And it's worth a lot. It truly is. And I think a lot of people who are in public service, even state employees, keep that in mind, that they have a defined benefit retirement package that they know is going to be there for them and that other people don't have.
Is there further discussion of Senate File 3793? Senator Gimsey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have a concern, I guess, thinking about a possible scenario where this council would recommend, say, a 5% increase for legislators and judges and everybody, and we're coming into, say, a budget year in which we're dealing with a budget deficit. How would all of that play out, and how would that look if we have this recommendation that we increase our salaries by 5% when we're having to go in and potentially cut programs in other
Senator
areas?
Senator Gimsey, it would seem to me that there that flexibility wouldn't be there, but I also wonder, Senator Moe, even in all the years that you were a member of the Senate, irrespective of the state's economic condition, were legislators' salaries or executive office holder salaries ever cut?
Madam Chair,
Senator Moe.
Member of the committee, no. What the way it has been, and I think the way you do it, is you make an appropriation to the Senate and to the House, and then both of the houses of the legislature live within what has been appropriated, and they've used the flexibility within that to make it work.
So the salaries would be taken care of, and then maybe there'd be sharing of staff more than done, or the per diem level would be reduced. I mean, that would be a possibility, or no travel, or any number of things. But what is not attached has been legislators' salaries that we have lived within, whatever that is, even though currently we haven't had an increase in 10 years, I guess. Is there further discussion? We do have other bills. Is there anyone else in the audience who wishes to speak either in favor or in opposition to 3793? Senator Moe, we appreciate your being here with us this evening. Senator Larson moves that Senate File 3793 is amended, be recommended to pass, and referred to the Committee on Rules. All those in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. Thank you very much. Ms. Boyd?
Thank you very much.
We appreciate your being here. This evening, Ms. Boyd has been appointed to the Campaign Finance Board by the governor. Ms. Boyd, if you would just like to give us a few comments about your background and your service on the board.
Thank you. My name is Felicia Boyd. I'm a litigation partner at Fagry & Benson. I practiced law there for 21 years. I focus my practice on intellectual property law. Approximately 3 years ago, Governor Pawlenty had appointed me to my first term on the Campaign Finance Board, a board I knew nothing about at all, and found the experience very enjoyable. And I'm pleased to have been asked to serve a second term where I get to see some of the interesting things that candidates do.
Ms. Boyd, the membership on the Campaign Finance Board, Ms. Betterman indicated she was a Republican member of it. It is divided between the parties. Are there also independent members?
Yes.
And what is your category?
Ms. Betterman is there as a former legislator, okay. A Republican legislator. I am a Republican seat. And then there's a former Democrat legislator, and then there's an independent, another Democrat. It's completely balanced.
That was not indicated on your application. That's the only reason why I'm bringing that up, or at least I don't see it there. Are there questions for Ms. Boyd? Senator Betzel.
I had the honor and actual pleasure to work with Ms. Boyd over the interim on the Supreme Court task force dealing with revising the rules of the Board of Judicial Standards and so forth, and I've had many opportunities to work with her. I find that she's a very capable attorney, and she's very diligent and so forth, and I think she's an excellent choice for this board, and so I would be happy to move her recommendation for her reappointment. I think I got it out there.
Just if you would make the proper motion.
Let the record reflect that I move that the committee recommend the appointment of Felicia Boyd to the Board on Judicial Standards be confirmed.
Is there discussion on that motion?
Board of Judicial Standards?
No, I'm saying Board of Judicial Standards. That's the other board.
No,
that's the Campaign Finance and Disclosure Board. That's the board that we had worked on. So, no, the Campaign Disclosure Board. Yeah.
Right.
What was blank, Madam Chair?
Is there discussion of Senator Betzel's motion that the appointment of Felicia Boyd to the Campaign Finance and Public Disclosure Board be recommended to be confirmed? Senator Roebling.
I feel bad. I'm sure she's been sitting here all afternoon, and we're moving. Maybe she would
be happy. Well, she did actually leave and come back, so we
to be moved through quickly, and normally we have more questions, but today I suppose we're kind of on a short schedule. I was curious though about the most interesting case that you had to decide on in your 3 years. Candidates and everyone puts decisions in front of you that you have to make, and you issue some rulings on them in a sense, or I'm not sure what they're calling their rulings or not, but I know that they are issued by the Campaign Finance Board. And do you remember any in particular that are particularly fascinating?
Yeah, you always find when you're on the spot like that that the ones that are probably inappropriate to mention come to light. It's an interesting situation because the board has a staff that handles a lot of the day-to-day work, and they come before us and we make findings or we make a decision on an issue advisory opinions. And literally off the top of my head, I seem to recall a matter of a member who was claiming that rides in a parade were part of a campaign finance expenditure. And I found it interesting to see all the different things that were involved in campaigns, be it riding in a coach and six or, you know, handing out balloons and whether or not you could actually hand out a balloon to someone if that was of sufficient permanence to constitute a gift. Those are the little matters that actually come to mind, and I find it fascinating that the things that underlie getting you guys elected, I mean, that's amazing. There were some very significant matters in last year, clearly, very big decisions involving funds coming into the state from outside political sources and funding other campaigns, and I'm sure we'll see more of that in the future. So trying to delve into those issues was a very intense experience.
Thank you. Is there further discussion?
Senator Betzel. Madam Chair, Ms. Boyd, you may not know how we do our job. You're the mother of six. I don't know how you do your job either. So.
Well, I thank you for letting me leave to pick one up from daycare and come back.
Appreciate your tolerance of our schedule as well. We do have Senator Betzel's motion that Ms. Boyd's appointment to the Campaign Finance Board be recommended to the full Senate to be confirmed. Any further discussion? All those in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you very much, Ms. Boyd, for returning this evening. Senator Betzel, Senate File 2720, the Omnibus Pension Bill.
Madam Chair, this is the Omnibus Pension Bill. You may have a copy of the bill as introduced. That was simply a vehicle bill. All the pension bills do get sent into the GovOps Committee. The Pension Commission has been working the last couple of months. Senator Larson is on that committee, as are Senators Mary Olson, Lynch, and Wergen. And we just finished our work the other day. And you do have what would be a delete-all in your packet. Before I move the delete-all, there is one typographical error we have to correct on it. On page 11, line 35, there is a series of references there, and there's a reference. It says subdivision 1. It's about one-third of the way through. That should be subdivision 2. So I need to correct that.
Okay, so we will incorporate into your delete all amendment that change on line 1135 to strike 1 and insert 2. Senator Betzel, are there any other changes you need to incorporate?
Well, I will have an amendment to offer, but that's just a technical one to put the bill in the shape that we need to proceed with it.
So we have the Senator Betzel moves the delete all amendment. Style 20H3082-27A. This is an author's amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Senator Betzel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do have Larry Martin, who the director of the Pension Commission, with us here. I will briefly go through. As you can see, it's a very thick bill. There's a number of provisions in here. Article 1 deals with the post-retirement fund, and again, I'll have to explain a few of these concepts for members. I'll do it as quickly as we can with the time constraints. But our pension funds are organized so that when you are an active employee, currently employed, you are in the current fund, and you pay into the fund, and there's employer-employee contributions, and the money's invested. Once you retire, you move out of there, and your money is put into a post-retirement fund. There are no more contributions. It's just invested. And so there's two separate funds. The Article 1 deals with just provisions on the post-retirement fund. We're cleaning up some adjustment language and so forth on about a year or so ago, we capped the automatic increases that could be paid to retirees. Now, understand the concept is important for Article 2 because we have a proposal in here that would require that if the ratio of funding for the post-retirement fund starts dropping, if it's either less than 80% in any year or less than 85% in two consecutive years, which means they're running out of money, then the post fund and the active fund will be merged, which we spent quite a bit of time on the Pension Commission on that. The reason why is because sometimes actuarial assumptions, the stock market, there's a number of reasons why the funds can start getting into trouble. We ran into that very situation with the Minneapolis Teachers Fund a few years ago when it just was going broke, and we ultimately had to abolish it and roll the people in, the retirees into the Teachers Retirement Association. This does not mandate that any of the funds will be merged. It just says it's a triggering mechanism. If certain things are met, then that would happen. There are certainly objections from some current employees who say that, well, wait a minute, why should my current fund take on the debts of the retirees by merging them together? On the other hand, there's no current employee who wants to retire and move into an underfunded post-retirement fund either. So, obviously these are things we do have to consider quite seriously, but this is what the Pension Commission recommendation is. Having vetted it with the various funds who are generally on board with this, I think Education Minnesota has some questions about whether that should be done with TRA. There's some issues that you may have heard about there, but the other funds are, I've not heard no real opposition from them. Article 3 deals with the phased retirement, return to employment provisions. These are individuals who retire and then want to come back and work later on. We obviously don't want a situation where somebody retires on a Friday and then comes back Monday and does the same job as a consultant. So we do have some provisions in here to limit how often they can do this, length of work, retirement, how long what the maximum amount they can work. That's in Article 3. Article 4 is a provision that Senator Wergen worked on, which we've had a number of situations that came before the Pension Commission where some retiree signed off on the pension benefits and wanted the full benefit paid to usually himself, and then the retiree dies, and then that's the first time that the widow finds out that she's not covered anymore because he took the full benefit and never told the wife about it. We've seen a couple of situations. This would make it a presumption that it would be paid to both spouses unless the retiree opts for a different beneficiary. Obviously, that's going to take and the spouse has to agree to have that done as well, too. Obviously, it's going to take a number of years for all that to come into place, so we're still going to, in the short term, probably see more of these situations where the widow is surprised to find out that the pension is ending with the husband's death. Article 5, there are just numerous administrative provisions. I'm not aware that any are really controversial. For example, it reinstates, it gives people in PERA the right to buy back military time and so forth. We've sort of phased that in. We have some of the hospitals were privatized or removed because they didn't actually privatize. There's not really a lot of things. It's a very thick section, but as I said, most of it's just administrative. Article 6 deals with a situation in the correction plan. There's a lot of people who work within the prison systems, and the people who have day-to-day contact with the prisoners, obviously it's a very dangerous job. They are able to retire earlier because of because of the demands of position. There's a lot of people who work in corrections that have no contact with prisoners, and we've set up sort of a situation up where we have a sort of a studies done, and this adds just a few maintenance workers and so forth that have had sufficient contact with the inmates so they would qualify for this. And this is something we do every year. This is just a very limited, it just applies to a very few people or few positions. Article 7 is something that actually deals with legislators, and is something that legislators probably need to pay attention to. We have two different plans for legislators depending upon when you were elected. Legislators elected through 1996 initially went into the old plan, of which was a legislator's only plan, and it's a defined benefit plan, as Senator Roebling was talking about a few minutes ago. And your pension is determined by the number of years of service, what your pay was. That was eliminated in 1997, so any legislator elected since after 1996 is in the same plan that our employees are in, the MSRS general plan. Likewise, legislators from the old plan who opted to move into the MSRS, unclassified plan. I was elected, I was in the old plan, I opted to move into the MSRS unclassified plan. However, we had a provision in there that restricts legislators and constitutional officers from moving into another plan, the MSRS general plan, which is what most government employees are in. And the reason, it's a sensitive issue because if you're able to do that, then you can basically take the time and service that you've had in the legislature and apply it to your next job. Now, it may not really be a controversial issue because this is a defined contribution plan. You pay your money in, the employer matches it, and if you move into another plan, you're actually moving the contributions you've made in. There were questions about people in the other plan, and I'll give one example. Senator Neville did not become a judge to enhance his pension. Clearly, he did not. He deserved to be a judge. He's going to be a very good judge. However, he was able, and no fault of his own. This is just how it works out. He was able to take, I think, his 17 years as a legislator. If he just retired and never had another job, his pension would have been based upon 17 years or 20 years or however long he served as a legislator, the number of years of service and what he received as a salary, that would have determined his pension. By being able to go become a judge, he can take those years as a legislator, and when he qualifies for retirement as a judge, he's not there yet. He just recently got appointed. He can obviously enhance his pension by the number of years he served in the legislature, which is very good for him. Former Representative Swigum obviously has another opportunity to do the same thing. That's one of the reasons why we were skittish about allowing legislators to do it in the first place, because there's opportunities to really enhance your pensions by doing so. Now, you'd have to serve in the legislature at least 10 years for the people currently in there. This does give new legislators elected starting in 2009 the opportunity to choose whether they wanted the MSRS general or the unclassified. And I call this to your attention because, again, this is something that deals strictly with legislators and constitutional officers, and it may be something, obviously, that we need to be very careful of and pay attention to and know how that affects you and the other members of the legislature. But that's Article 7. Article 8 deals with privatizations. We every year we have situations where usually a hospital that is public goes private, and the employees want to be able to stay within the pension system, and we've done this every year to allow that to remain, even though the employer becomes privatized. That's no fault of the employee. Article 9 deals with the fact that when the Minneapolis Teachers Fund was terminated, the state money that we paid in there had to be redistributed. A lot of it went to the Teachers Retirement Association, but we've got two other pension funds, Duluth and St. Paul, and we've been adjusting the formulas each year, and this just adjusts the formulas as to Duluth getting some more money that would have gone to TRA. Article 10 deals with higher education accounts, usually the unclaimed property, where somebody sets up an account and then they leave, they can't find them. What do you do with the money that's sitting there? Article 11 is some financial accounting. A few years ago, the Pension Commission had its own actuary. We eliminated that because of budget concerns. We let the individual major funds hire their own actuaries, and then they had to do the work to provide it to us. I have been concerned about having our own set of eyes in here. This allows the pension funds, you don't have to have a jointly retained actuary. They can retain their own. But there's a system in here by which the pension commission will have the funds available so that we can have $140,000 through the pension fund so that we can actually hire our own actuarial firm so we can have our own review of the various funds. Article 12 deals with what are called retirement savings programs, and these are mainly updated things. It came to me actually from Anoka County, but this applies through many organizations that allow their employees to actually put money into a retirement savings account. Updates it. Article 13 is updating some or revisiting some language from about a year ago, where we made it very difficult to have individuals not qualify for duty disability pensions. It was just too easy. Too many people were qualifying. This is kind of revisiting some of the last year to allow somebody an additional benefit if they've had in excess of 20 years. Article 14 is an issue between the Minneapolis Firefighter Police Association and, frankly, the Minneapolis City Council dealing with a revised what's called 13th check. Article 15 are a new many. This is Volunteer Firefighter Association. We have many Volunteer Firefighter Associations throughout the state. One of the many provisions that are in here. This also provides a task force to study having a statewide volunteer firefighter plan. Article 16 is just a small provision on withholding dues from if a retiree wants to withhold dues to payable to a labor organization, they can do that. And then finally, Article 17, the last article, are just a number of single or small individual pension provisions provided by Senator Senjum, Metzen, Limmer, Marty. Representative Wardle had one with no Senate companion. Senator Pariseau, Dill, Anderson, Cohen, and Representative Hoppe. These are all, as I say, individual situations. We reviewed every one of them at the Pensions Commission, and most of them are just, you know, somebody goofed up or, you know, we're trying to make some adjustments in individual situations. Madam Chair, that's quite a bit, but we spent months working on this, and that is a summary of the bill. I do have...
Senator Betzel, do you want to offer the 30A amendment?
Right, I have the 30A amendment. I talked about the fact that we're redistributing the aid that went to the Minneapolis Teachers Fund and has been redistributed. This just corrects some of the distribution to the Duluth teachers, which actually says that some has already been paid, some is still due, but this actually retains some of the unpaid funds into TRA because that part wasn't covered. I'll move the 30A amendment.
Any questions on the A30A amendment? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Are there questions from members to begin with on Senate file, whatever it is, House file?
Senate file.
2720. Senate file 2720. Is there Senator Roebling?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Betzel, I was just trying to read on page 121 under section 12, the voluntary statewide volunteer firefighter retirement plan advisory board. And maybe 2 years ago, the Legislative Audit Commission put out a report suggesting perhaps more effective way that we could help the volunteer firefighters manage their retirement funds. And I haven't quite had time to read through the whole thing, but is this following one of those recommendations, or what is this doing?
Well, Madam Chair.
Senator Betzel.
Senator Roebling, yes. A lot of these small organizations, frankly, do a very poor job of investing their money. They get in trouble. This is, you know, where they're over their heads and what they're doing. And this is mainly of a study to move in the direction to, I think, you know, my preference is early on to take some of these underperforming groups and maybe move them into some statewide organization. We don't have any plans right now to move everybody in it. There are some that, frankly, do a good job of managing their money. But we have to get some group. There's like, what, about 800 of these organizations out there, and it's very difficult to track, you know, what they're all doing. But this does, this is coming out of some of the recommendations of the legislative auditor. That's correct. But this starts the study process to get us there.
Senator Roebling.
Yeah.
So that's what the advisory board is about. They're going to be putting together recommendations, because I remember the legislative auditor's recommendation was that we try and get these funds into the state investments.
Right.
And I know there were a few, maybe eight across the whole state, who actually performed better than the mm-hmm. state investments. And, you know, we could have exempted them, I suppose, after a couple of years of showing that kind of performance. But there were some that were really underperforming right. and putting their members, plus their communities, kind of a financial risk, in this they tried to make this up so that these pensioners later on would have the money that they were expecting to receive.
This, Madam Chair, and Senator Roebling, this establishes a board. It doesn't quite roll them in there yet, but that'll be the next step, I think.
Ready to vote?
Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to speak either in favor or in opposition to Senate File 2720? Please come to the table.
Yes, Madam Chair.
Welcome to the committee. If you'd identify yourself, please, for the
record. My name is Renee Lara with Education Minnesota.
Mr. Lara.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, we as an organization are opposed to one specific provision in this bill, and that is Article 2, the merger, proposed merger of the post fund into the TRA active fund. You may have heard about our position on this, and I'd like to provide some very short background to explain where we're coming from. The post fund contains, it is not mentioned in this legislation, it contains or it has a deficit of $1.1 billion. So by merging the post fund into the active funds, the TRA portion is $1.1 billion deficit in that post fund. The new merged fund would now contain this deficit, which would make it very difficult, if not impossible, at least in the near future, for us to obtain a benefit improvement such as a rule of 90, which is something that our members have been asking for, or at least the two-thirds of the membership, active employees who do not have that rule of 90 benefit. For those of you who are not familiar with that rule of 90 benefit, is someone with that benefit, which is someone who was hired before June 30th, 1989, can retire as early as age 58 if they have 32 years of experience. Someone who does not have it, which is the younger two-thirds, for the most part, members of our of the teaching community, they would have to wait until age 66. If that deficit is transferred over and that fund is merged, it would require some additional infusion of money if the stock market does not perform very well. And there would be a need for a contribution rate increase, either from the employer side or the employee. And chances are that the employee would be looked at as one of the two sources of that increased contribution. We would be faced with a situation where we would tell our members, we would have to let them know that they could be asked to contribute more in order to take care of that deficit that originated in the retirees post fund. And for that population that does not have the benefits that their more veteran counterparts, some of them teaching right next to them next door, that would be in a very unfair situation. And so we are very strongly opposed and would to this merger and would request that Article 2 be stricken from this bill as it moves forward.
Senator Betzel.
Well, Madam Chair, Article 2 is not just TRA. It involves the Minnesota State Retirement Systems, PERA, and so forth. And the other major funds, frankly, you know, would like to see the merger going forward. The Pension Commission had some limited testimony on the teacher retirement issue. And we have committed that we are going to have some. It'll have to be over the interim. We can't, you know, I don't foresee really that we're going to be able to do much more in this particular session. But as I say, I see this two separate issues. As for teacher retirements, I had a preliminary fiscal note run. It would take about $60 million a year to provide an enhanced benefit. I don't think it's going to be so-called rule of 90. The reason why the rule of 90 was eliminated back in 1989 is, frankly, people were retiring too early. The people were living longer and are living much longer now and had not made sufficient contribution to the fund to sustain people retiring as early as age 57 or 58. So, I mean, the people who are insisting that they have to have a rule of 90 because others have it, the fund simply couldn't afford it. That's why we've got a $1 billion problem with the post fund right now, is because, you know, it's too much of a drain, in addition to other factors. So I don't see any way or shape or form we're going to have a rule of 90, even though I introduced bills because I would like to see something done. I don't. Another reason why we're not going to have anything done this year is, frankly, you know, given some of the budget cuts and everything we have to do, if we put something in this bill that would enhance anybody's retirement benefit, when we can't even give, you know, nursing home workers a cost of living increase, I think it would make this bill dead on arrival with the governor, you know, and probably rightly so. I think we can proceed with the merger. I think the Pension Commission will still work on this issue, but again, $60 million has got to come from somewhere, and frankly, I don't see any teacher and employee wanting to voluntarily reducing their pay to pay for it. I can't see any school district finding the money to pay for it. It's going to come out of, you know, the state, you know, increase on the formula that does nothing to lower class sizes. It's got nothing to do with education. It just enhances the retirement, which it's an issue that needs to be addressed, but I can't see how we're going to do it this year.
Madam Chair.
We have one more comment.
Very, very short. We have considered and would support a suggestion that came from the House in response to this predicament. Representative Thiessen produced a proposal that would allow the members to pay for their own benefit improvement as a way to make this a package where both a merger and a benefit improvement could be passed at the same time. And so we would urge you to consider that option, because if the merger passes as a standalone proposal, we are, in essence, foreclosing the possibility of improving benefits for active educators in the near or maybe in the far future. And so we would ask you to really consider having some form of benefit improvement that is perhaps not this $60 million package, or at least allow the members to pay for their benefit improvement.
I'm sure the Pension Commission did not have any chance to look at it. Representative Thiessen had some proposal that he wanted to make at the very end of the very final meeting, and you know, we just didn't have the time to do it. So I don't know what his proposal says, and as I say, at some point, you know, to spend any time on that one kills the rest of this bill for this year. And I'd rather not do it.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Is there anyone else who wishes to speak in favor or in opposition to this bill? We do have another bill to take up, and it is a must-take-up bill.
Madam Chair, I'm Luther Thompson from TRA. I'd just like to clear up one thing. Whether or not the merger went through or not, the deficit of the post fund already exists on TRA's books. So, you know, the 1.65 deficiency that we have in our last actuarial report already reflects that deficiency and is currently a liability of TRA. So the merger has no impact on that. And our board's first priority was the post-fund merger, and we're definitely opposed to any linkage with that or an increased riskiness to the possible defeat of that post-fund merger. Thank you.
Further questions or comments? Senator Larson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just briefly, I just want to agree with both Senator Betzold and Mr. Lara. We do, in fact, have to deal with this issue, or it's going to get worse. But I think there is a lot of interest on the Pension Commission within the legislature to address the issues that the folks from Education Minnesota have raised. And so I would just want to express that publicly, that I think that there is a gap and an issue we need to address. And I look forward to working over the summer and the fall to try to, with Senator Betzold, who had introduced the bill originally. So,
further discussion. Thank you, Senator Larson. Further discussion. Any other comments from anyone in the audience, either in favor or opposition of this bill?
Madam Chair, I'll move.
Seeing none, Senator Betzold moves that Senate File 2720 as amended be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Finance.
Correct.
All those in favor of the motion, please say aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails.
Okay. Welcome. Senator Rust, we've got Senate File 3857.
This is to revamp the whole human rights.
Actions,
so
not words. Actions.
Okay. And it will cost a lot of actions. They said they have 18.
Mr. Chairman.
Welcome to the committee.
Bringing up Senate File 3857. 3857 is going to serve as the vehicle for local government omnibus policy bill under the same conditions that we have been doing the other policy bills. If this bill passes here, it would go to the Committee on Rules. Because it is a late bill and moved, as I understand it, I don't believe this bill needs to go to finance. Ms. Schaefer-Pellinen, if this bill is approved with its amendments, it would go to the Rules Committee. Is that correct?
No.
Or to finance?
It's a late bill. That's for rules.
But it gets kicked automatically to rules. We don't actually have to refer.
It's moved to the floor.
Yeah, it's moved to the floor. Moved to the floor, and then it would be, and then by rule, it would be sent to the Rules Committee.
Okay, so the motion would be just that the bill pass, and then the system takes care of where it goes. Okay. So, Mr. Chairman, the underlying bill is a bill relating to Hennepin County for a transfer, setting up a transfer procedure to for drainage system management. We have Ms. Larson with us, who will spend about 35 seconds explaining why this bill is needed, and then we will move on to the Delete Everything Amendment.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Senator Rest. Actually, Joel Settles was to be here from Hennepin County Environmental Services and could not make it, so I'm just going to read his brief testimony.
Please identify yourself for the record.
I'm sorry. Peg Larson, Hennepin County Environmental Services. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of Senate File 3857 and House File 4223. This bill will assist Hennepin County and water management authorities in Hennepin County manage these drainage systems more effectively and efficiently by providing an alternative transfer procedure. This bill only affects public ditches where Hennepin County is the ditch authority, a total of 17 ditches. The proposed transfer does not force local water management authorities to accept the transfer, but rather facilitates the petition process. The proposed bill is essentially a housekeeping measure that reflects how water resources are currently being managed in Hennepin County. The existing transfer procedure places a significant financial burden on the petitioners, and this will lift that burden. I encourage the committee to support this bill. Thank you.
So that is the vehicle for these local government provisions, some of which we, as you will see, I'm explaining things before we take up the Delete All Amendment, to bring together other provisions either that are in the committee, that have passed the House, or that have passed the Senate, or that are present in other bills, much the same way as in the state government omnibus bill, which was actually taken up in the Finance Committee. I regard it as not exactly omnibus, but kind of an odds and ends bill. And I understand that some object to that, but that is the procedure under which we are operating this session to make sure that policy bills and policy issues are not in the budget reconciliation bill. And so this bill came to us, and it's non-controversial, the underlying bill, and we decided to use it as a vehicle rather than choosing something that was already out there. So, and before we take up the delete all amendment, I want to explain what's in there. There is the House File 1762, which is Representative Simon's City Charter Commission discharge mechanism provided. Last year, there was a bill that got vetoed that included increase in the compensation, or not compensation, but allowance for how much could be spent. That's not part of that. Senate File 2564 also regards charter amendments that are authorized by ordinance and water and sewer charges. It passed the Senate, and it's on the House second reading. The two Charter Commission's bills were wrapped up in Senate File 2654. Also includes the Erickson bill, Senate File 3268, dealing with public hearings during our interim use ordinances that are authorized. The only difference between the House and the Senate there was an effective date. We hope that the delete all amendment reflects the better choice of language. Senate File 3341 is the Business Energy Accountability Act. It passed the Senate. There are substantive differences between the Senate file and the House companion. There is House File 2423 in the bill that deals with companion dogs, allowing municipalities, or we'll be adding that by amendment, I guess, to enact ordinances allowing dogs to accompany persons patronizing outdoor areas of food and beverage establishments. Then there is Senate File 2967 dealing with the Minneapolis Park and Recreation Board and City Council dedication fee that imposes some standards. It passed the Senate. It was on the House calendar for the day, and the bills are identical in the House and the Senate. Senate File 3137, that is in the bill, which is Section 2 of the Delete All Amendment. I will be deleting that out of the bill. It passed the House today. Right. Is that
separate bill?
That's what the note here says.
That's the description of the Delete All Amendment? The
no, A3? That's not yet. I can delete this. Yeah, I haven't come to the other. We don't need that. It passed the House today, and so there are two sections in the Delete All Amendment that refer to that, and we'll be taking them out. Then there's also House File 3420, Representative Hillstrom's bill, which is a supplemental declarations of common interest communities registration revised for procedures and fees charged by county registrars. It passed the House, and it's on the Senate. There's a Senate second reading, and the House file was substituted on general orders. Then there is Senate File 3533, the Senator Kevin Dahl bill, which House companion is Representative Laura Broad. Subordinate service district surplus revenue refund authorization to towns upon removal. you can get that one. It's in the Senate tax bill, may be included in the House tax bill. So with that, the authors delete all amendment, and then we can go through these things more appropriately. Is the A3 amendment with the exclusion of lines 1-9 through 111, which is Section 2, and Section 11, which is on page 6, lines 28 through 34, and then all on page 7, all and then through 816. Those are not necessary.
So would you like to get the A3 amendment before us and make that oral amendment?
To incorporate into the delete all amendment the deletion, striking of Section 2 and Section 11. So I incorporate those changes into my delete all amendment, and, Mr. Chairman, I move the delete all amendment.
Senator Rust moves the delete all amendment incorporating the oral amendment of the striking of Sections 2 and Section 11. Everyone understand the motion? All those in favor, aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. We now have the bill in shape.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Rust.
Yes, I've got to do that right now. And then, furthermore, as an author's amendment, I have the A4 amendment, which changes the language of Section 1 with regard to where municipalities say dogs can go.
Senator Rust moves the this is an author's
A4
amendment.
Moves
the
A4
author's amendment. All those in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Mr. Chairman, again, these are gathering together compilation of bills from various sources, some of which were moving separately, but in the plan of trying to streamline bills moving, we have put them together, bundled them together. Again, I hesitate to call any of these bills, at least the ones I'm carrying, as omnibus bills. I consider them as bundled bills. But it's in the name of efficiency and streamlining, and in general, I think in these bills are not controversial, but the only one that's really mine is the underlying bill.
Hennepin County Drainage.
Or maybe a couple of the charter ones, too.
Well, those are mine.
Representative Tilbury's.
The charter ones?
I have one of them. Do you have the other, Senator Betzel?
Madam Chair, I did have a charter bill, I think the ones that you talked about on discharge of charter commission. That was my bill.
These have passed the Senate previously, so that's we're not reinventing anything.
I think we understand it.
Yeah.
Mr.
Chair.
Are you ready for questions?
No.
Yeah, for the bill, I realize that this is the first time that many of us have seen it. But it is gathering them together, and I hope that by having him present in this form, that members will have an opportunity before they're brought up on the floor, which would be tomorrow, I imagine, that you have a chance to look at it.
We're under call.
But these are not, again, most of these are ones that have gone through committee and or they have passed the Senate. So they should not be new provisions to anyone.
Okay.
So, Mr. Chairman, I move that Senate File 3857, as amended, be recommended to pass. And just recommended to pass. Senator
Roebling.
Thank you. You know, I know we've seen most of these, but it's just the oddest compilation of bills. You know, we've got commerce, we've got transportation. We have a number that came through our committee, and I'm kind of fine with that. But, you know, I don't know, don't we have to kind of meet a constitutional test of some kind? And I just don't know how this is going to make it. And I think just based on that, I'm going to vote no, because
I understand.
I don't think this is the way it should be done.
And, Mr. Chairman, I understand. And, what again, these are vehicles to go into conference. And I can imagine that, quite frankly, a number of these provisions in conference, because we're trying to put them together all in the same bill that come from the House and the Senate, may not survive even the legislature, much less the governor's approval.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Pappas.
It just seems to me that these are all related to local government, and we've just never had omnibus bills related to
local government. This is something new.
But I think there has been an attempt here. They're all bills that are appropriate to be in front of this committee, and therefore I think they're
right.
Appropriate to be in the same vehicle.
Senator Gerlach?
Thank you. Senator Rest, are there any of the long list of bills that you mentioned that have they all been through their other appropriate committees? We're not, for example,
they've either had things like a House Senate, House second reading before our committee, that they've passed the Senate, and have a House second reading. Or House second reading and a Senate second reading. I may be missing one here or there that is, you know, new language or something, but I think for the most part, all of them have done one of the other.
Renews her motion that Senate file 3857,
as amended,
be recommended to pass.
Mr. Chairman, is it all right if I vote from here?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
That way, you know, now I'm on the record. I'm here.
All those in favor? Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion does prevail.
Senator Lori, you may adjourn the committee.
There being no more business before the State and Local Government Committee, this committee stands adjourned.
Ooh, bad form. Not on the table. When is the committee ordering the pizza?
This is an odd way to do business.
Thank you.
Well, that's fine. Joanne's has built technical that was made to this, what's now section 4, that was back to law. I'll try to explain it to you for the moment. No technical change.
You could ask you
All right.
Thank you very much. Probably, yeah.
It's been too late.
Sorry.
Did they start?
Yeah, that's what the phone call was. I'm kind of pissed at your office. The least I could have done is push.
Yeah,
they
just called and
said. We're under. Colleen said we're under call.
I gave her all the information.
Like, at least check.
I
mean, it's not like. You guys said we can.
Are you married?
Hello. Yeah.
No, I understand.
Has it been that long?
Yeah.
On next time. Done if they could wait 7 minutes.
Okay.
But I had my. I will pass it along. Very impulsive.
Look at your statue books for a second.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah.
You're kidding.
Just for what?
So strange.
Yeah. Oh.
So you guys know
16 years.
About the committee's process. I think we should be able to have rules pretty quickly.
Half of my life.
My
husband.
We don't have a lot to do in the play. We'll be recessing quite a bit to take messages back and forth with the house.
Good. Very good. I don't like to think of it. But that next it.
Or I think we're going into session at 11, so you could do it.
So those are the only two ways they're organized.
Yeah, I mean, not that
long. Like, we have to accept the committee report.
It makes me feel better because my dad's
so it was a brief conversation, kind of
your senior year,
kind of laying out, like, the rules to pass forward soon.
Take more.
I think they
Gina, I got it. So work. We missed the pork chops.
I think so. I'm going to do the same thing. We're going to eat at home. Again.
We just take
it. We tried it. We don't want to. So
we did it both ways.
If she needs it.
Come back. Four.
All right.
Get a haircut. Take care.
Hey,
guys.
We're both good there.
Oh, here was my. How come I didn't have
this? It was Jenna when the baby was bit.
In the
I don't
profile.
Know where it came from.
Well, it came from a gallon. Okay, I got it now. Did I bring my first one? Tonight, I need you to stay. With somebody.
That's fine.
Yeah. Somebody's got to stay.
I heard her husband was only a little bit older than me. Not in that, I wish.
Is it? Is this somebody's computer?
Stacy
here? Okay.
Session is over. But she's happy, so.
That's how I feel about Jenna, but now my oldest daughter, Christine, she moved out of the house and moved in with Chris. They lived together a year and then they got married. They lived together 2 years, I don't think they would have gotten married. They've been 9 years together. They didn't play, you know, and it takes life so seriously, it's so negative, and she's real joyful, and so it's like eventually, they might work it out, and they separated once before.
I don't think we should.
So we never know, but I think
it's hard if the fundamental things
it's nice right. If you go.
Well,
so I can check it upstairs. Do you want to see if they talked to her about when we could have
a
you can schedule your vacations around session, but you can't do much about like major life events.
Well, that's just,
oh my God, she's like a gallon drunk.
I mean, what am I going to say? They're in their 80s, so
yeah.
I'm going to say that we come
was the bill introduced? They're going to mark up the bills tomorrow in the House. It's so difficult.
I have no idea. I've never worked on it before. It's just only in heaven. I guess rural districts are more populational.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
The ditch is here.
Yeah, we stayed away from things that were.
It's not like we make them do it.
Yeah.
This gets through, they're going to be so excited.
look how effective Peg is.
This one hearing ear wasn't even me. God. Yeah, it's supposed to be Joel. And Joel really did write that one page. I said, you have less than 30 seconds. And he told me that he does. Because he's got a wealth of knowledge.
Yeah.
Of people that have questions you to go and be for hours. So.
Yeah.
So I told him to go home.
Oh, we appreciate it.
I said, you can go home. I think I can
around
this.
Here, brevity is a good thing.
That's what I thought, too.
If you can keep it, if you can keep it to a minimum, you're a much better chance of passing things than if you keep talking.
Well, he gave me a page of history, too, which I gave to her.
Okay.
So that, in fact, he had emailed that to her, too.
Well, then, if there's anything else that comes up.
You have myself. Yeah. Thanks so much, Brenda. I have to do one thing right this session.
Aww.
Oh, damn it.
So, that's fun.
I think it's on paper.
And the reports here, too.
For confirmation. Thank you.
What do you get? Do you just want these on the cart?
You can just recycle stuff. There's recycling.
There
are there. Just.
So I was telling Peter, I had talked with my office about scheduling rules quickly. They sounded hopeful that we could do it tomorrow afternoon. But I'm going to check in with them and just see if they've had a chance to talk about that more.
Okay. Well, we'll just be.
At this point,
we're just trying to move things along so that
tomorrow and find out what she's supposed to wear on the boat.
Because really?
That's really important.
You really had no idea what the boundaries of my job were, did you?
I think we all have a certain amount of let the dog out today, and
yeah,
it's not the worst thing. It's not the worst thing of all the things I've ever had to do.
Actually, the personal elements of our job is more, we deal with Larry's kids a lot, but they're
great. Actually, Pam's dog's diaper.
Okay,
her dog has a diaper.
Her dog was in heat.
Oh no!
She asked me to watch the dog for the week. The two dogs for the week. So I just.
I can't top that, Brenda.
Oh, I can even top it with my. I can give you another good one. This is, we have multiple ones. Jenny had to, when Ann had her hip replaced, had to go pick up some clothes for her at her house. And she wanted Jenny to get a bra for her. And so Jenny does this. And then she didn't bring it. It's like. Like I was supposed to know that my that meant that too.